Side 10.
P. P.A. Papa. Father. Heat of love and devotion associated with. He was face to face with his image again. This time it was nude, powerful. Its outlines haloed with an aura of love and desire, its arms outstretched. Get lost. You embarrass me. The image disappeared. Damn it. Has she fallen in love with me? Hi, spook. There was a picture of herself, pathetically caricatured. The blonde hair in strings, the dark eyes like blotches, the lovely figure drawn into flat, ungracious planes. It faded, and abruptly the image of powerful, protective, paternal, rushed at him. Torrentially destructive. He stayed with it, grappling. The back of the head was de Courtenay's face. He followed the Janus image down to a blazing channel of doubles, pairs, linkages, and duplicates. To Reich? Yes, Ben Reich, and the caricature of Barbara, linked side to side like Siamese twins, brother and sister from the waist upwards, their legs turning and twisting separately in a sea of complexity below. B linked to B, B, and B, Barbara and Ben, half joined in blood, half... Link! A call far off, directionless. Lincoln! It could wait a second. That amazing image of Reich had to... Lincoln Powell, this way, you fool! Mary? I can't find you. Be out in a few minutes. Link, this is the third time I've tried to locate you. If you don't come out now, you're lost. The third time? In 3 hours. Please, Link, while I've got the strength. He permitted himself to wander upwards. He could not find upwards. The timeless, spaceless chaos roared around him. The image of Barbara de Courtenay appeared, now a caricature of the sexual siren. Hi, spook. Lincoln, for the love of God. In momentary panic, he plunged in any direction until his peeper training reasserted itself. Then the withdrawal technique went into automatic operation. The blocks banged down in steady sequence, each barrier a step backward towards the light. Halfway up, he sensed Mary alongside him. She stayed with him until he was once more in his living room, seated alongside the urchin, her hand in his. He dropped the hands as though they were red hot. Mary, I located the weirdest association with Ben Reich, some kind of linkage that... Mary had an iced towel. She slapped his face with it smartly. He realized that he was shaking. Only trouble is, trying to make sense out of fragments in the id is like trying to run a qualitative analysis in the middle of a sun. The towel flicked again. You aren't working with unit elements. You're working with ionized particles. He dodged the towel and stared at Barbara. My God, Mary, I think this poor kid's in love with me. Image of a cock-eyed turtle dove. No kidding. I kept meeting myself down there. And what about you?
Me?
Why do you think you refused to send her to Kingston Hospital, Mary said. Why do you think you've been peeping her twice a day since you brought her here? Why did you have to have a chaperone? I'll tell you, Mr. Powell.
Tell me what?
You're in love with her. You've been in love with her since you found her at Chuka Froods.
Mary.
She stung him with a vivid picture of himself and Barbara de Courtenay and that fragment she had peeped days ago, the fragment that had made her turn pale with jealousy and anger. Powell knew it was true. Mary, dear, never mind me. To hell with me. You're in love with her. The girl isn't a peeper. She isn't even sane. How much of her are you in love with? One-tenth? What part of her are you in love with? Her face? Her subconscious? What about the other 90%? Will you love that when you find it? Damn you! I wish I'd let you stay inside her mind until you rotted. She turned away and began to cry.
Mary,
for the love of... Shut up, she sobbed. Damn you, shut up. There's a message for you from headquarters. You're to jet for Spaceland as soon as possible. Ben Reich's there and they've lost him. They need you. Everybody needs you. So why should I complain?
Chapter 12. It was 10 years since Powell had last visited Spaceland. He sat in the police launch that had picked him up off the luxury ship Holiday Queen, and as the launch dropped, Powell stared through the port at Spaceland glittering below like a patchwork quilt worked in silver and gold. He smiled as he always did at the identical image that came to him each time he saw the playground in space. It was a vision of a shipload of explorers from a far galaxy, strange creatures, solemn and studious, who stumbled on Spaceland and researched it. He always tried to imagine how they'd report it, and always failed.
"It's a job for dishonest Abe," he muttered.
Spaceland had started several generations back with a flat plate of asteroid rock, half a mile in diameter. A mad health cultist had raised a transparent hemisphere of air gel on the plate, installed an atmosphere generator, and started a colony. From that, Spaceland had grown into an irregular table in space, extending hundreds of miles. Each new entrepreneur had simply tacked another mile or so onto the shelf, raised his own transparent hemisphere, and gone into business. By the time engineers got around to advising Spaceland that the spherical form was more efficient and economical, it was too late to change. The table just went on proliferating. As the launch swung around, the sun caught Spaceland at an angle, and Powell could see the hundreds of hemispheres shimmering against the blue-black of space, like a mass of soap bubbles on a checkered table. The original health colony was now in the centre and still in business. The others were hotels, amusement parks, health resorts, nursing homes, and even a cemetery. On the Jupiter side of the table was the giant 50-mile hemisphere that covered the Spaceland Nature Reserve, which guaranteed more natural history and more weather per square mile than any natural planet.
"Let's have the story," Powell said.
The police sergeant gulped.
"We followed instructions," he said.
"Rough tail on Hassop, Slicky following him. The Rough got taken out by Reich's girl."
"It was a girl, eh?"
"Yeah, cute little trick named Duffy Wygant. Damnation."
Powell jerked bolt upright. The sergeant stared at him.
"Why, I questioned that girl myself. I never..." He caught himself.
"Seems like I did some lousing myself. Shows you. When you meet a pretty girl..." He shook his head.
"Well, like I say," the sergeant continued, "she takes out the Rough, and just when the Slicky moves in, Reich jets into Spaceland with a commotion.
Like?
Private yacht. Has a crash in space and limps in hollering emergency. One killed. 3 injured, including Reich. Front of the yacht stove in. Derelict or meteor stray. They take Reich to the hospital, where we figure he's planted for a little. When we turn around, Reich's gone. Hassop, too. I grab a peeper interpreter and go looking in 4 languages. No dice.
Hassop's luggage? Gone likewise.
Damnation. We've got to pinch Hassop and that luggage. They're our motive. Hassop is Monarch's code chief. We need him for that last message Reich sent to Courtney in the reply.
Monday before the murder?
Yes, that exchange probably ignited the killing. and Hassop may have Reich's financial records with him. They can probably tell a court why Reich had a hell of a motive for murdering de Courtney.
Such as, for instance,
the talk around Monarch is that de Courtney had Reich with his back to the wall.
You got method and opportunity.
Yes and no. I opened up Jerry Church and got everything, but it's ticklish. We can show Reich had the opportunity. It'll stand if the other two stand. We can show the murder method. It'll stand if the other two stand. Same goes for Reich's motive. They're like three wigwam poles. Each of them needs the other two. No one can stand alone. That's old man Moses' opinion. And that's why we need Hassop. I swear they ain't left Spaceland. That efficient I still am. Don't hang your head because Reich outsmarted you. He's outsmarted plenty, me included. The sergeant shook his head gloomily. I'll start peeping Spaceland for Reich and Hassop at once, Powell said, as the launch drifted down for the passage through the airlock. But I want to check a hunch first. Show me the corpse.
What corpse?
From Reich's crash.
In the police mortuary, displayed on an air cushion in the stasis freeze, the corpse was a mangled figure with dead white skin and a flaming red beard.
Uh-huh, Powell muttered. Kano Quizzard.
You know him?
A gymster. Was working for Reich and turned too hot to be useful. What'll you bet that crash was a cover-up for a killing?
Hell!
The cop exploded. Those other two guys are hurt bad. Reich might have been faking, admitted, but the yacht was ruined, and those two other guys, so they got hurt. So the yacht was ruined. So what? Quizzard's mouth is shut for keeps, and Reich's that much safer. Reich took care of him. We'll never prove it. But we won't have to if we locate Hassop. That'll be enough to walk friend Reich into demolition.
Wearing the fashionable spray-gun tights, Spaceland sports clothes were being painted on this year, Powell began a lightning tour of the bubbles. Victoria Hotel, Sportsman's Hotel, Magic, Home from Home, Ye New Bubblesberg, The Martian, very chic, The Venusberg, very bawdy, and the other dozens. Powell struck up conversations with strangers, described his dear old friends in half a dozen languages, and peeped gently to make sure they had the precise picture of Reich and Hassop before they answered. And then the answers, negative, always negative. The peepers were easy, and Spaceland was filled with them, at work and at play. But always the reply was negative. A revival meeting at Solar Reams. Hundreds of chanting, genuflecting devotees participating in a kind of hopped-up midsummer moon festival. Reply negative. Sailing races in Mars from Home. Catboats and sloops skipping over the water in long hops like scaled stones. Reply negative. The plastic surgery resort. Hundreds of bandaged faces and bodies. Reply negative. Free flight polo. Reply negative. Hot sulfur springs. White sulfur springs. Black sulfur springs. No sulfur springs. Replies negative. Discouraged and depressed, Powell dropped into Solar Dawn Cemetery. The cemetery looked like an English garden. All flagged paths and oak, ash, and elm trees with tiny little plots of green grass. Muted music from costumed robot string quartets soared away in strategic pavilions. Powell began to smile. There was a faithful reproduction of the Notre Dame Cathedral in the center of the cemetery. It was painstakingly labeled Ye Wee Kirk of the Glen. From the mouth of one of the gargoyles in the tower, a syrupy voice roared,
See the drama of the guards portrayed in vibrant robot action in Ye Wee Kirk of the Glen. Moses on Mount Sinai, the crucifixion of Christ, Muhammad in the mountain, Lao Tse and the moon, revelation of Mary Baker Eddy, the ascension of our Lord Buddha, the unveiling of the true and only God galaxy. Pause, and then, a little more matter-of-factly, owing to the sacred nature of this exhibit, admission is by ticket only. Tickets may be purchased from the bailiff. Pause, then another voice, injured and pleading. Attention, all worshippers. Attention, all worshippers. No loud talking or laughter, please. A click, and another gargoyle began in another language. Powell burst out laughing.
You ought to be ashamed of yourself, a girl said behind him.
Without turning, Powell replied, I'm sorry, no loud talking or laughing. But don't you think this is the most ludicrous?
Then the pattern of her psyche hit him, and he spun round. He was face to face with Duffy Wickend.
Well, Duffy, he said. Her frown changed to a look of perplexity, then to a quick smile.
Mr. Powell, she exclaimed, the boy sleuth, you still owe me a dance.
I owe you an apology, Powell said.
Delighted. Can't have enough of them.
What's this one for?
Underestimating you. The story of my life.
She linked arms and drew him along the path.
Tell me how reason has finally prevailed. You took another look at me.
I realized you're the cleverest person Ben Reich has working for him.
I am clever. I did do some work for Ben, but your comment seems to have deep, brooding undertones.
Is there something? The tale we had on Hassop.
A little more accent on the downbeat, please.
You took out our tail, Duffy. Congratulations.
Aha! Hassop is your pet horse. A childhood accident robbed him of a horse's crowning glory. You substituted an artificial one, which clever up, Duffy. This isn't going to travel far. Then, boy wonder, will you ream your tubes?
Her pert face looked up at him, half serious, half amused.
What in hell are you talking about?
I'll spell it out. We had a tale on Hassop. A tale is a shadow, a spy, a secret agent assigned to the duty of following and watching a suspect.
Contents noted. What's a Hassop?
A man who works for Ben Reich, his code chief.
And what did I do to your spy?
Following instructions from Ben Reich, you captivated the man, ravaged him, turned him into a derelict from duty, kept him at a piano all day, day after day. And...
Wait a minute, Duffy spoke sharply. I know that one, the little bum. Let's square this off. He was a cop.
Now, Duffy, if I asked a question. He was a cop.
Following this Hassop?
Yes.
Hassop, bleached man, dusty hair, dusty blue eyes.
Powell nodded.
The louse, Duffy muttered. The low-down louse.
She turned on Powell furiously.
And you think I'm the kind that does his dirty work, do you? Why, you peeper, you listen to me, Powell.
Reich asked me to do him a favor. Said there was a man up here working on an interesting musical code.
Wanted me to check him. How the hell was I supposed to know he was your goon? How was I supposed to know your goon was masquerading as a musician?
Powell stared at her. Are you claiming that Reich tricked you?
What else?
She glared back.
Go ahead and peep me.
If Reich wasn't in the reservation, you could peep that double-crossing... Hold it! Powell interrupted sharply. He slipped past her conscious barrier and peeped her precisely and comprehensively for 10 seconds. Then he turned and began to run.
Hey! Duffy yelled. What's the verdict?
Medal of Honor, Powell called over his shoulder. I'll pin it on as soon as I bring a man back alive.
I don't want a man. I want you.
That's your trouble, Duffy. You want anybody.
Who?
Anybody,
No loud talking or laughter, please.
Powell found his police sergeant in the Spaceland Globe Theater, where a magnificent Esper actress stirred thousands with her moving performances. Performances that owed as much to her telepathic sensitivity to audience response as to her exquisite command of stage technique. The cop, immune to the star's appeal, was gloomily inspecting the house face by face. Powell took his arm and led him out.
"He's in the reservation," Powell told him. "Took Hassop with him. Took Hassop's luggage, too. Perfect alibi. He was shaken up by the crash and he needs a rest. Also company. He's 8 hours ahead of us."
"A reservation, huh?"
the sergeant pondered. 2,500 square miles of more damned animals, geography and weather than you ever seen in three lives.
What's the odds Hassop has a fatal accident if he hasn't had one already?
No takers at any price. If we want to get Hassop out, we'll have to grab a helio and do some fast hunting.
No mechanical transportation allowed on the reservation.
This is an emergency. Old man Mosey has got to have Hassop.
Go get that damn machine and argue with the Spaceland board. You could get special permission in maybe 3-4 weeks, by which time Hassop would be dead and buried.
What about radar?
Or sonar?
We could work out Hassop's pattern.
No mechanical devices outside of cameras allowed in the reservation.
What the hell plays with that reservation?
100% guaranteed pure nature for the eager beavers.
You go in at your own risk. The element of danger adds spice to your trip. Get the picture? You battle the elements. You battle the wild animals. You feel primitive and refreshed again. And that's what the ads say.
What are they doing there? Rub sticks together?
Sure. You hike on your own feet. You carry your own food. You take one defensive barrier screen with you so as the bears don't eat you. If you want to fire, you got to build it. If you want to hunt animals, you got to make your own weapons. If you want to catch fish, likewise. You versus nature. And they make you sign a release in case nature wins.
Then how are we going to find Hassop?
Sign a release and go hike for him.
The two of us cover 2,500 square miles of geography.
How many squad men can you spare?
Maybe 10.
Adding up to 250 square miles per cop. Impossible.
Maybe you could persuade the Spaceland board.
No.
Even if you could, we wouldn't be able to get the board together in under a week.
Wait a minute. Could you get them together by peeping them, sending out urgent messages or something? How do you peepers work that way?
We can only pick you up. We can't transmit to anybody except another peeper, so...
Hey-ho, that's an idea.
What's an idea?
Is a human being a mechanical device?
Nope.
Is he a civilized invention?
Not likely.
Then I'm going to do some fast co-opting and take my own radar into the reservation.
Which is why a sudden craving for nature overtook a prominent lawyer in the midst of delicate contractual negotiations in one of Spaceland's luxurious conference rooms. The same craving also came upon the secretary of a famous author, a judge of domestic relations, a job analyst screening applicants for the United Hotel Association, an industrial designer, an efficiency engineer, the chairman of Amalgamated Union's Grievance Committee, Titan's superintendent of cybernetics, a secretary of political psychology, 2 cabinet ministers, 5 parliamentary leaders, and scores of other Esper clients of Spaceland at work and at play. They filed through the reservation gate in a unified mood of holiday festivity and assorted gear. Those that had got word on the grapevine early enough were in sturdy camping clothes. Others were not, and the astonished gate guards checking and inspecting for illicit baggage saw one lunatic in full diplomatic regalia march
through with a pack on his back. But all the nature lovers carried detailed maps of the reservation, carefully zoned into sectors. Moving swiftly, they spread out and beat forward across the miniature continent of weather and geography. The TP band crackled as comments and information swept up and down the line of living radar in which Powell occupied the central position.
"Hey, no fair. I've got a mountain dead ahead. Snowing here. Fool blizzard. Swamps and, mosquitoes in my sector.
Hold it. Party ahead, Link. Sector 21.
Shoot a picture. Here it is. Sorry, no sail. Party ahead, Link. Sector 9. Let's have the picture. Here it comes. Nope, no sail. Party ahead, Link. Sector 17. Shoot a picture. Hey, it's a goddamn bear. Don't run. Negotiate. Party ahead, Link. Sector 12. Shoot a picture. Here it comes. No sail.
Ah-choo.
That the blizzard? No, I'm a cloudburst. Party ahead, Link. Sector 41. Shoot a picture. Here it is. Not them.
How do you climb a palm tree? You shinny up. Not up. Down.
How'd you get up, Your Honor?
I don't know. A moose helped me.
Party ahead, Link, Sector 37. Let's have a picture. Here it comes. No sail.
Party ahead, Link, Sector 60. Go ahead.
Here's the picture.
Pass 'em by.
How long do we have to keep on traveling?
They're at least 8 hours ahead.
No. Correction, peepers. They've got 8 hours start, but they may not be 8 hours ahead.
Spell that out, will you, Link?
Reich may not have trekked straight ahead. He may have circled round to a favorite spot close to the gate.
Favorite for whom?
For murder.
Excuse me, how does one persuade a cat not to devour one?
Use political psychology. Use your barrier screen, Mr. Secretary.
Party ahead, Link, Sector 1.
Shoot a picture, Mr. Superintendent.
Here it is.
Pass 'em by, sir.
That's Reich and Hassop.
What? Don't make a fuss. Don't make anybody suspicious. Just pass 'em by. When you're out of sight, circle round to Sector 2. Everybody head back for the gate and go home. All my thanks. From here on, I'll take it alone.
Leave us in on the kill, Link.
No, this needs finesse. I don't want Reich to know I'm abducting Hassop. It's all got to look logical and natural and unimpeachable. It's a swindle.
And you're the thief to do it.
Who sold the weather, Powell?
The departing peepers were propelled by a hot blush. This particular square mile of reservation was jungle, humid, swampy, overgrown. As darkness fell, Powell slowly wormed his way towards the glimmering campfire Reich had built in a clearing alongside a small lake. The water was infested with hippo, crocodile, and swambat. The trees and terrain swarmed with life. The entire junglelette was a savage tribute to the brilliance of reservation ecologists who could assemble and balance nature on the point of a pin. And in tribute to that nature, Reich's defense barrier screen was in full operation. Powell could hear mosquitoes whine as they battered against the outer rim of the barrier, and there was an intermittent hail of larger insects caroming off the invisible wall. Powell could not risk operating his own. The screens hummed slightly, and Reich had keen ears. He inched forward and peeped. Hassop was at ease, relaxed, just a little beglamoured by the idea of intimacy with his puissant chief, just a little intoxicated by the knowledge that his film canister contained Ben Reich's fate. Reich, working feverishly on a crude, powerful bow, was planning the accident that would eliminate Hassop. It was that bow and the sheaf of fire-tipped arrows alongside Reich that had eaten up the 8 hours' start on Powell. You can't kill a man in a hunting accident unless you go hunting. Powell lifted to his knees and crawled forward, his senses pinpointed on Reich's perception. He froze again as alarm clanged in Reich's head. Reich leaped to his feet, bow ready, a featherless arrow at half-cock, and peered intently into the darkness.
"What is it, Ben?" Hassop murmured. "I don't know. Something."
"Hell, you've got your barrier, haven't you?"
"I keep forgetting."
Reich sank back and built up the fire. But he was not forgetting the barrier. The wary instinct of the killer was warning him vaguely, persistently. And Powell could only marvel at the intricate survival mechanism of the human mind. He peeped Reich again. Reich was mechanically resorting to the tune block he associated with crisis. "Tensor," said the sensor. "Tensor," said the sensor. "Tension, apprehension, and dissension have begun." Behind that there was turmoil, a mounting resolution to kill quickly, kill savagely, destroy now and arrange the evidence later. As Reich reached for the bow, his eyes carefully averted from Hassop, his mind intent on the throbbing heart that was his target. Powell drove forward urgently. Before he had moved 10 feet, alarm tripped again in Reich's mind, and the big man was on his feet once more. This time he whipped a burning branch from the fire and hurled the flare towards the darkness where Powell was concealed. The idea and execution came so quickly that Powell could not anticipate the action. He would have been fully illuminated if Reich had not forgotten the barrier. It stopped the flaming branch in mid-flight and dropped it to the ground.
"Christ!"
Reich cried, and swung around abruptly at Hassop. "What is it, Ben?" In answer, Reich drew the arrow back to the lobe of his ear and held the point on Hassop's body. Hassop scrambled to his feet.
"Ben, watch out! You're shooting at me!"
Hassop leaped to one side unexpectedly as Reich let the arrow fly.
"Ben, for the love of..."
Suddenly Hassop realized the intent. He turned with a strangulated cry and ran from the fire as Reich notched another arrow. Running desperately, Hassop smashed into the barrier and staggered back from the invisible wall as an arrow shot past his shoulder and shattered.
"Ben!" he screamed. "You son of a bitch!"
Reich growled and notched another shaft. Powell leaped forward and reached the edge of the barrier. He could not pass it. Inside, Hassop ran screaming across the far side while Reich stalked him with a half-cocked bow, closing in for the kill. Hassop again smashed into the barrier, fell, crawled, and regained his feet to dart off again like a cornered rat. Reich followed him doggedly.
"Jesus," Powell muttered.
He stepped back into the darkness, thinking desperately. Hassop's screams had aroused the jungle, and there was a roaring and an echoing rumble in his ears. He reached out on the TP band, sensing, touching, feeling. There was nothing but blind fear, blind rage, blind instinct around him. The hippos, sodden and viscid. The crocodiles, deaf, angry, hungry. Swombats, as furious as rhinoceri, whose size they doubled. A quarter of a mile off were the faint broadcasts of elephant, wapiti, giant cats.
"It's worth the chance," Powell said to himself. "I gotta bust that barrier. It's the only way."
He set his blocks on the upper levels, masking everything except the emotional broadcast, and transmitted fear, fear, terror, fear, driving the emotion down to its most primitive level. Fear, fear, terror. Fear, fear, flight, terror, fear, flight, terror, flight. Every bird in every roost awoke screaming. The monkeys screamed back and shook thousands of branches in sudden flight. A barrage of sucking explosions sounded from the lake as the herd of hippos surged up from the shallows in blind terror. The jungle was shaken by the ear-splitting trumpetings of elephants and the crashing thunder of their stampede. Reich heard and froze in his tracks, ignoring Hassop, who still ran and sobbed and screamed from wall to wall of the barrier. The hippos hit the barrier first in a blind, blundering rush that were followed by the swombats and the crocodiles. Then came the elephants, then the wapiti, the zebra, the gnu. Heavy, pounding herds. There had never been such a stampede in the history of the reservation. Nor had the manufacturers of the defensive barrier screen ever anticipated such a concerted mass attack. Reich's barrier went down with a sound like scissored glass. The hippos trampled the fire, scattered it, and extinguished it. Powell darted through the darkness, seized Hassop's arm, and dragged the crazed creature across the clearing to the piled packs. A wild hoof sent him reeling, but he held on to Hassop and located the precious film canister. In the frantic blackness, Powell could sort the frenzied TP broadcasts of the stampeding animals. Still dragging Hassop, he threaded his way out of the main stream. Behind a thick bole of a lignum vitae, Powell paused to catch his breath and settle the canister safely in his pocket. Hassop was still sobbing. Powell sensed Reich 100 feet away, back against a fever tree, bow and arrows clutched in his stricken hands. He was confused, furious, terrified, but still safe. Above all, Powell wanted to keep him safe for demolition. Unhitching his own defense barrier screen, Powell tossed it across the clearing towards the embers of the fire, where Reich would surely find it. Then he turned and led the numb, unresisting code chief towards the gate.
That's the end of this side.